5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Model Moon!
The dark side of the Huddle Moon. Immutably amazing crypto wisdom. Welcome to our 2019 year in review episode of Dark Side of the Hollow Moon. On this episode, we look back at 2019, we cover some of the projects that are building, some of the projects that aren't, and some of the projects that are in a regulatory holding pattern. We talk about some of the more controversial figures in the space, some of the scams, and a few other fun stories. You are now listening to the Dark Side of the Hollow Moon.
Copy. This show is proudly sponsored by Salamantech's point-of-sale devices and software. Tired of all the headaches dealing with cryptocurrency? You don't know what a private key is? You don't want to deal with exchanges? Well, if you're a business and you just want to run your business without thinking about cryptocurrency headaches, look no further than Salamantech's. We provide point-of-sale software that allows you to get paid in fiat currency, that's euros, allowing your customers to pay in cryptocurrency, that's BTC, ETH, and a host of others.
Dark Side of the Huddle Moon proudly uses the audio services of Eye the Sound. Beyond the amazing sound production, they've really been a sounding board, pun intended, for our show, giving us great customer support and constructive criticism and feedback. So if you want a little bit more personalized attention you're not going to get from a bigger provider, check out iTheSound.com.
Huddle Moon!
All right, and we're back with another episode of Dark Side of the Huddle Moon. Josh, how are you today? Welcome to 2020.
Happy New Year, Cade, and all the listeners out there. Looking forward to 2020. Let's make the Dark Side of the Huddle Moon the best podcast out there in the cryptosphere.
Yeah, I'm excited. We've got new equipment. We've got a sound engineer, new logo. I didn't get too drunk and lose my private keys during the New Year's Eve party, so I'm happy. Let's do this.
Yeah, let's get going. I mean, we have a lot of things to do this year. We've got some really interesting guests. We've revamped the show. We're going to make it much bigger. We went on many more platforms, and we're really pushing harder on the digital marketing side. So if you haven't already, like, subscribe, leave a comment, share, and we'll see you on the dark side of the Huddle Moon in 2020, and we'll grow this audience from, let's say, zero all the way to the moon at over 10K at least. That's what we're aiming for, 10,000 loyal followers.
Yeah, and today's episode, I think we're going to cover like some of the highlights of 2019, some of the biggest stories, the biggest winners, the biggest losers, some of the scams, some of the things we just found interesting. We'll kind of look back, and maybe we'll do a follow-up where we kind of do some predictions for 2020. But the first thing I want to talk about, I kind of want to expand out a little bit. And it seems like, maybe you get the same feeling, it seems like more people are becoming financially literate. They're looking for answers. You see negative interest rates in Japan. Now they're happening in Germany as well. You're seeing inflation, hyperinflation. People are looking into the history of money. They're looking for answers. And now I think they're looking at things like gold, silver, platinum, and of course, crypto. And it seems like before it seemed like an alien, but I talked to people that really aren't in the crypto space. And it seems like more people are learning what money is, how inflation works, and why it's such a bad thing. Are you getting that same vibe?
Well, actually, in Korea, not really. Because everybody is just content with how well the financial system works here in terms of fintech and the ability to use the existing financial system seamlessly wherever you go from your phone. It's already a cashless society here. So perhaps in the, let's say, the less digitally advanced societies like the United States and the United Kingdom and Germany, where everyone's still using bits of paper to pay for things, then people might start thinking like, okay, this $5 bill has been, it's just a piece of paper with numbers on it. Someone printed it. Why do I believe it's holding any value? And I think that that is the biggest change we're going to see in 2020, actually, is, like you said, more people realizing what money is and thinking, wait, the government just printed some paper and put a number on it, and I've believe this thing for my whole life. And then they'll go down the rabbit hole and say, it wasn't even the government, it was the private banks that did it. So then that's what starts the Bitcoin enthusiasm, and they go down the rabbit hole and the whole new world of crypto opens up.
Yeah, but I mean, Japan's fairly advanced, but they've got negative interest rates. I don't think being cashless is a net gain. And it, I mean, those negative interest rates could cross the Sea of Japan and hit Korea too. And then even there, I think people would be like, why are the interest rates negative?
Well, Japan's a really interesting country. It's basically trapped in the 1990s. So the last time I was there was in October for the Rugby World Cup, as you know, and it really was like going back into a spotless 1990s. There's no trash anywhere, unlike Korea, where there's trash all over the place on the sidewalks and stuff. Tragedy of the commons. In Japan, everything's spotless, but in Japan, everything was built in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s and has remained that way from then onwards, basically. So if you ever want to go back to 1997 or something like that, then just go to Japan. And it's quite a nice experience, but also it's quite bizarre. So if you like Google GDP per capita Japan 1997, and then you do GDP per capita Japan 2017, I think that's what the most recent stats are. It should be 2018 or 19 now. And there was no GDP per capita growth in Japan over a 20-year period. So I think it was approximately like $40,000. In 1997, now in 2017, it was $40,000. So they're used to things not growing and things going backwards. Why not? I mean, it's Japan. Welcome to the world of Japan.
Yeah, well, I agree with you in the sense that the cashless society can be convenient. And, you know, even in the U.S., I do use a card, you know, 98% of the time. But
really,
I'm hesitant about a cashless society, you know, with Sweden being completely cashless, and in China, you know, they might go cashless, and then it's a complete surveillance state. And that kind of ties into another thing I saw, that Germany's reducing the anonymous gold buying limit. It went from 15,000 euros down to 10,000, and now it might go down to 2,000. And I think whether it's crypto or cash or gold, that anonymous purchasing power, that anonymous control of your finances is important.
Well, of course it's important, and it's also one of those historical precursors to what looks like financial disaster or like more authoritarian governments. Like, it often happens that they put capital controls on, prevent people from moving money abroad, or prevent people from moving out of cash into some kind of safe haven asset like gold. So I think that we'll see more of that from governments that are a bit worried about the future of their own, let's say, fiat currency. So now that Brexit is happening, finally, after 3.5 years, I mean, it was 2016, June 23rd, that the British people voted to leave the European Union. And now it's actually looking like on January 31st, 2020, it's really going to happen, with the Conservative government being returned with a massive majority now to the Houses of Parliament, and with basically one thing to do, which is get Brexit done. So I think we're going to see a nimble Britain, like a global Britain, a Britain that wants to be competitive. And that's perhaps worrying the Germans.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. That's probably worrying them a little bit more than not being able to buy more gold. One thing, going back to South Korea, where you are, South Korea has no taxes on crypto profits. And a couple people said that if the U.S. adopted this, crypto would really become an asset class overnight, because the U.S. is really what's driving the market when it comes to KYC and AML and all this enforcement. So I think that's one place where South Korea is really on the right track.
Well, yeah, that would be, an altruistic way of looking at it. I think that the reality is that a lot of people in South Korea hold a lot of crypto, and they've made a lot of money, and money talks, and going into the ear of politicians is quite straightforward in South Korea because everyone knows who the power people are. And then you find you unpeel the onion to get through the layers of the people that are protecting the power person. But once you're through those layers, then and you're in the right, you're in the right room with the right guy, then you can make some influential things happen. So what I'm not surprised about is that crypto is becoming something that won't be taxed, because there are so many people that have got a vested interest in that not happening. And why would anybody want to give their, basically their away, their speculative investment or a big portion of it to the government? Why would anyone want to do that?
Yeah, I mean, no one does. They just don't want to have the tax man come after them. But that actually brings me back to you mentioning Brexit. If it does happen, we'll have to see regulatorily how they want to handle crypto, because, you know, they already have a lot of banks there. So if they are friendly to it, it could help them be more nimble, like you say, be an innovator. Because I think the EU, it's kind of leaning towards regulating crypto and maybe cracking down. So I think that would be one place where they could really shine if Brexit actually goes through.
Well, the UK is kind of a funny one. The FCA is designed to set up competition. So that's why there are so many of these kind of emerging digital type of banks like Revolut and TransferWise and N26 and Starling that are based in the Silicon Roundabout or in London for that reason. So we do actually have quite an innovative fintech sector already in the UK. But when it comes to cryptocurrency, actually the government's position on that is that it can be taxed. You do have to pay capital gains if you are a UK citizen, UK resident citizen, and paying tax. You have to include it in your tax return. So I'm not sure how much of that is being enforced right now. I don't think they have a task force to chase people down. The UK is actually still quite a large trading market for cryptocurrency. If you look at world trading populations, then the UK is actually quite high. So there are a lot of traders in the UK. I don't really know if people are necessarily going to be recording it on their tax return or not. Let's see what happens. I think it would be a great move. But then again, I'm not sure. It depends how many lords and ladies have got vested interests in Bitcoin and cryptocurrency holdings. Because, you know, a lot of people are very surprised to hear this, but tax winnings, I mean, your winnings on your gambling profits are not taxable in the UK. Whereas in the United States, you go to Vegas, you win a poker tournament, and you end up paying, depending on which state you live in or whatever, and to the state, you end up paying a lot of money in taxes to the just from your winnings. And people in the UK find that bizarre. You win this money, and the real winner's the government every single time. But in the UK, if you go to the horse races or whatever, you win at the casino. Whatever you win, you keep it. You don't need to declare that because it's gambling profits. So, but then again, the lords and the ladies have a lot of vested interest in that. They own all of the stables for the horses. They own the race courses. They make a lot of money out of these events. So that kind of explains why gambling is not a taxable thing. But I'm not for more taxes anyway. So the fewer taxes, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, let's go from one negative topic to another. So another trend we're kind of seeing in the crypto space is more KYC, AML regulations. I think you'd probably agree that the U.S. is largely behind it. And we're also seeing a push against it with decentralized exchanges, dApps, DeFi, a push towards dereg in certain states in the U.S. or certain other jurisdictions. So some people think, oh, that's great. You know, they're coming to compliance with the SEC. They're coming to compliance with the U.S. regulatory agencies. Other people who are more like crypto anarcho cypherpunks are really saying that this is a bad thing. So what's your take on it?
Well, in 2020, they are going to actually finally pass some hopefully coherent and cohesive and comprehensive cryptocurrency legislation in the United States. It looks set to be passed in 2020. And then it's going to be much more straightforward. At least people will know the rules of engagement, so to speak. I mean, one of the big things about going back to Brexit, the uncertainty around it, because no one knew, is it going to happen, is it not going to happen? And that uncertainty is actually the most damaging thing. It doesn't really matter what the outcome is, to be honest. If the government says almost all crypto except 10% of it is allowable, that 10% of the market can then be focused upon, and then a lot of the energy and unsought energy will be dedicated towards that 10%. That 10% will become really, really dynamic and fluid, and all of that wasted 90% will be gone. So it doesn't particularly matter, in my opinion, which laws they pass, because the people that can't interact with the United States will just go elsewhere. But at least they know that now. And the people that can will then focus further upon it. So I'm quite looking forward to the legislation, because no matter what happens, doesn't matter what legislation passes, it's always going to be good, because then you've got like some clarity and people going to push forward on whatever is legal.
Okay, so what you're saying is the regulatory clarity is important, because a lot of times they're in a limbo. They're like, is this legal? Is this not legal? It's kind of in this weird gray area where companies don't know if they're in compliance.
And people just basically say, right, well, I'm not going to do anything then, but I'm kind of interested in it. I want to get into the gates of heaven, but am I going to hell? Okay, I'm just going to wait here. So that's the thing, really. So once you've got this clarity around the situation and the law is clear, then we're going to see innovation in whatever is legal. And that's most important, instead of this kind of guessing game. Because in the United States, you've got such a fragmented regulatory system in terms of who is doing the oversight for what. And people don't know who the final authority is, really. They want to be compliant, but then they want to be compliant with which body, because you've got too many of them in the United States. At least in the UK, we've just got one body, the FCA. In America, you've got like four or five different competing and often contradictory regulatory bodies. So that needs to be cleared up, and that will be cleared up in 2020. So 2020 is going to be a big year for crypto, regardless of what happens in terms of the individual laws that are passed and the actual substance of those laws. It's going to be good to have some clarity.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, let's talk about one of the biggest crypto projects of 2019 that we did our first show on, Libra. And I think it's good to go and look back at it. And from what I've seen since we've done the episode, it seems like Libra's kind of stalled out a little bit. It's kind of bogged down by regulations. They're kind of maybe in a holding pattern. Mm. And I'm kind of curious if you've changed your opinions or what your thoughts are about Libra compared to what you said about it on the show. Do you think it's really going to take off in the in developing countries? Do you think it's going to just implode? What are your takes on Libra, like the news, how it affected the marketplace, and where you see it going?
Well, I think what would be really great is if we can use our new powers of production to interject a clip. So let's play a clip now and let's see what I said. Right, so that was about 8 months ago now when that was said. So I think that's largely played out. I believe at the time I was basically thinking that it was never going to get off the ground because there was going to be too much resistance from government. I remember saying the French said no immediately. They were like, this is not going to fly. And the SEC were never going to let it go. Being based in Switzerland, but then still trying to play in the US market, it's just not going to work, frankly. You can't just say, right, oh, well, we're based in Switzerland, so it's cool. They know they're an American company. They know they're trying to compete with the US dollar or at least be a financial services institution, but not have to comply with financial regulations. So I honestly did think it was not going to get off the ground, and we're in this quagmire right now. So I don't know. I think I was also quite bullish on the potential for innovation with it, and that it's going to be the emerging markets and all of that capital that could be then deployed in these labor-ready markets, in the gig economies and things of that nature. But I think that that's what really scares the governments of the world now. And in fact, I think 2020 is going to be the year of like a scaling back of globalization in general. I think we're going to go back towards more, let's say, decentralized, but is more devolved governments. So in terms of more localized and let's say responsive governments is going to become more normal in this decade, because I think that what we've seen over the past 20, 30 years, this experiment of globalization has really resulted in a few things. You've got mega cities now, which I don't know, you could argue is great, or you could argue is a disaster for the environment. If you believe in that stuff, you could believe it's a disaster for the makeup of a society. There's been like lots of small agricultural towns around the world that have been, you know, a lot of the young people have left and moved to the big cities. This is especially in the, you know, emerging economies of the world, not only in developed economies. So I think that it's exacerbated that globalization. And then you've had some type of kickback. And you've had Trump in the United States. You've had Brexit in the United Kingdom. And I think that this trend is going to continue on when other countries realize that actually America's got richer since they did this. America seems to, the stock market's up. And then time will tell what happens with Brexit proper after it happens in January 31st of this this month. But time will tell how that works out. And my prediction is it's going to work out wonderfully. And then other countries will look at that and think, wow, okay, we need to kind of scale back on these supranational fake government bodies with these unaccountable bureaucrats. We need a little bit less of that and more localized or, let's say, decentralized government. And I think that that's where Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, and this new financial awareness that you talked about at the very start of the show, it can really come into the forefront. People can start to think, all right, now we've got more localized, responsive, small government. Now, how do we take control of our own economic and financial lives? And that's where the education continues, thanks to the internet.
Yeah, that was interesting. I don't know how much that was related to Libra, but
when it comes to Libra, I mean, it was basically an expansion on the topic of the day, which is Libra, but the logical conclusion about what's going to happen with it. I mean, Libra wants to be a competing global currency, but it doesn't want to have to deal with any financial regulations. So that's just not going to fly. It's not going to get off the ground. The only way that they can do it is by being a DeFi solution, which means that they're not a registered company in anywhere. It's just an open source technology and people use it. Now, Facebook could choose to adopt some open source coin into its infrastructure that it doesn't own, but then there's no profit motive there. So, you know, what can you do about that? So let's move on. Maybe we can talk about some DeFi solutions. I think that DeFi is going to be a really big thing in 2020. Let's go on to the next topic. Yeah. Unless you've got more to add on the Libra front. What do you think about the Libra stuff?
I think it's a long shot it's ever going to get approved. I know there's another crypto company, like I think out of Boston, that wants to do something very similar to Libra, like a basket of currencies. If it ever gets off the ground, I think it'll try and compete with these state cryptos that China and a few other countries are looking at. But I just, like I said, I kind of agree with you. It's such a long shot it's ever going to get off the ground and ever get approved, you know. So, yeah, let's...
Yeah, CBDC. I think that is going to be an interesting in the 2020s, this decade, the roaring 20s, that's going to be an interesting one, how, you know, central bank digital currencies are going to either thrive or fail. And I honestly think they will fail because it's just putting a shiny new digital spin on an old thing, which is government controlling cash and being able to print at will and to inflate and deflate and manipulate the currency, especially the Chinese. I mean, you got to hand it to the Chinese guys. They're really good at manipulating their own currency. They've managed to do it for years and years, and just being on a digital ledger is not going to change that, especially when they can control it. So that's going to be an interesting case in 2020. What happens with the central bank digital currencies?
All right. Yeah, definitely. Let's move on. Like you said, let's talk about the big dog, Bitcoin. So price action wise, it's kind of gone up and down. It's kind of fluctuated mostly in the $7,000-$8,000 range. But I think kind of what I want to talk about with Bitcoin is, for better or worse, it's basically the store of value coin now. People use it as a store of value, kind of, even though it fluctuates a lot, and it's mostly an investment. You know, they keep talking about Lightning, and it seems like it's always 18 months off. So for better or worse, it seems like Bitcoin is this store of value, this immutable ledger, and I don't know if it's ever going to go back to being that peer-to-peer cash. So that's kind of my take on Bitcoin. I am somewhat bullish still on the price, I think, because a lot of people are still going to get into it, but I'm not sure if Lightning is ever going to work.
Well, Bitcoin was actually a really, you know, it's one of the top performing digital assets of 2019. It was, I think it started the year really low in the mid 3000 range. And now it finished the year in like the low 7000. So I think it was a 95% return if you bought at the start of the year and then you sold at the very end. So that's a pretty good return on investment. Obviously, the worst year was in 2018, when you started the year at like, you know, $15,000, $16,000, $17,000, $18,000 for a couple of days there, and then you finished the year super low. I think that must have been the year of being wrecked. I think that was the big disaster. But 2019 was actually a good year for Bitcoin, all things told. There was a lot of development. Layer 2 solutions still being talked about. Then you've got new coins that are becoming more prominent that are offering interoperability and more scalability and things of that nature. So I think that you're right about Bitcoin being the store of value now. It's seen as the store of value thing. Will it ever become the peer-to-peer cash? Of course not. Bitcoin cannot be cash. It doesn't have the throughput capacity. 7 transactions per second is where it tops out. I mean, right now, in e-commerce worldwide, commerce worldwide, there's over 1 million transactions per second. So it's just not scalable enough. You'll never be able to scale Bitcoin, the original core layer, to that level of being able to handle that amount of transactions. But that's not to say that it won't be used as a settlement layer, just like gold was in the past, where you had big clearing houses that would just basically ship gold or pass gold on a ledger, on a piece of paper, back and forth to each other to clear debts and things of that nature. I think that you could see Bitcoin being used as a gold 2.0 in that fashion, because it's quite straightforward. And you just need to build stuff on top of it that is scalable and faster. So let's hope that Lightning Network happens. But like you, I'm a bit skeptical, because I've been hearing about Lightning Network for a few years now, really. So
yeah,
is it going to happen? I don't know. Let's see.
And also, too, now I think there's a lot of projects jumping to that peer-to-peer cash space. We've got Bitcoin Cash, Dash, Monero, some of the bigger ones. But there's also like Grin, there's Beam. I actually just read an article yesterday about Light Cash, which is a Beam fork. You know, sometimes the forking can get a little bit crazy, but I think there's going to be other solutions in this crypto space for the peer-to-peer cash stuff. So let's talk about, let's move on. Let's talk about the rise of some big exchanges. I think when it comes to winners in 2019, I think the two big winners were maybe Coinbase and Binance. Coinbase has seen a lot of growth. They're doing some interesting things. and Binance, of course, with their BNB Binance token, and they're expanding quite a lot. And there are a couple other big exchanges, but it seems like they're pretty big and they're not really going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, even in that huge bear market that we saw, Coinbase made like over $1 billion in 2018, and they've made more money in 2019. And it looks set to continue into 2020. I mean, why would it? They're basically the bank of the crypto world, or they are the house of the crypto world. If you want to liken a lot of people's trading to gambling, essentially, because it is speculative investment, or it's just risk taking, essentially. So, Coinbase and Binance have done really well. The BNB's also done very well, and it's designed to do well. I mean, it's designed to be burnt off periodically, that therefore increases the remaining pool's value. So it's the whole point of BNB is to increase in value. So as you've got more and more people coming into the Binance ecosystem, with Binance launching in United States, and they've already launched in Jersey in the United Kingdom, that's like an overseas place, so you've got a fiat on-ramp, they've onboarded credit cards and debit cards now, they're available in Turkey now, which is a promising space for cryptocurrency. They've expanded their operations significantly. They've always been willing and able to jurisdiction hop, so they'll just go wherever it treats them best. And when you're making over $1 billion a year, there are a lot of places that are willing to treat you pretty nicely for a cut of that. So I wouldn't be surprised if Binance continues to go on this massive tear that it's been on. I think they'll have a little bit of trouble in the United States. That's where Coinbase has been smart, because Coinbase has basically played it safe. They've just played by the very, very unclear rules, I guess, or the limiting rules that there are available. They've just stuck within that, and they've only sold a couple of coins, really. They don't try and sell. They don't have a huge number of pairs like Binance does in the US market. They're only trying to onboard noobs, essentially, and that business model is working well. So if it's not broke, don't fix it. You know what they say. Oh, Cade, you need to turn on your mic, mate.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree with that. All right. I don't really have much to add to that, but yeah, I just see those two continuing to grow, and maybe there'll be more decentralized exchanges to maybe compete with them. But yeah, I think you're pretty much spot on there. I kind of want to talk about maybe some of the projects that have done the most development in 2019. And, of course, Bitcoin's been doing some stuff, and some of it's in the roadmap with Snore signatures and Taproot. And I think Ethereum has done some interesting things with DAI, and you can stake it and get, I think, 10 times the interest you would from a normal bank. I think a lot of the things that Ethereum's doing in the roadmap are actually going to be coming in the next year, so maybe we could talk about it then. But I've been really hyped about Bitcoin Cash. I know I've talked about it a little bit on the episode, but they implemented Cash Shuffle, which is a coin mixing protocol where they have the Shuffle Saturdays, and they also do the SLP dividend tool, and you can create SLP tokens, and now we see some tokens being created. You can trade them on exchanges, and the most recent thing is they're going to do a Tor integrated Cash Fusion build, so that's going to even add another layer of privacy onto one of the biggest peer-to-peer caches. So when it came to development, I thought Bitcoin Cash did more than just about anybody this year.
Yeah, and honestly, Bitcoin Cash has gone from strength to strength. The team behind it have done a reorganization of how they present themselves. Roger's no longer the CEO, but he's definitely a spokesperson for Bitcoin Cash. And he's a very large investor of Bitcoin Cash. He's doing anything he can to help promote Bitcoin Cash. Obviously, Bitcoin.com, which is the Bitcoin Cash homepage, has become a bit of a news hub. They've hired a lot of writers and an editorial team. They're actually putting together like a bit of a rivalry with other crypto news sites in terms of quality of content has improved a lot. Obviously, there's a slight bias towards Bitcoin Cash on Bitcoin.com. And still, the newbie will undoubtedly be a little bit confused about what the difference between Cash and what they like to call Core is. But that is by design, obviously, having Bitcoin.com and not, and you know, and really talking about Bitcoin Cash all the time, and even the color scheme linking the Bitcoin.com green with the green of BCH is just a way to connect it in people's minds with the orange of the BTC right on the top fold in the navigation bar at the top on every single page. I think that that's a smart move for them, though. I mean, if you've got a large position in Bitcoin Cash and you naturally want to improve its visibility and a mind share in the world, and they've definitely done that this past year, and I think they're going to continue to do that in 2020, especially the exchange with more base pairs. And as new people get into it, people will just search naturally Bitcoin.com. It's going to be this first thing that they type in, unless they type into Google. But then even in Google, Bitcoin.com is going to be ranked very high when you search for Bitcoin. So I think they've got a massive year ahead of them. When it comes to actual innovations in the technology, there's a lot of stuff that people talk about. And that's the one thing that is the downside of the cryptocurrency space. There's always the coming soon TM, which is the, we've got this great idea. Here's how it could work. Here's what it might look like. We're going to work on it soon. It's coming. It's on the way. And that happens a lot. So I think in the 2019, I think that has to be the last year that people can get away with saying stuff like that now.
Yeah.
In the 2020s, it needs to be, we have a roadmap, we're going to develop this product just like any other tech product. So like if you're an Android development team and you say, right, we've got this idea, we're going to develop it, and then in a year's time, it's still not done. I mean, that development house is not, it's going to be out of business. So I think in the blockchain space, we're going to see a lot more, a lot more deaths in the market. The products and the teams that haven't delivered anything, they just need to all go to zero and die. And capitalism needs to work, and resources need to be reallocated, basically. So let's hope that some of these technological innovations actually happen. But whenever it says is coming, or whenever people talk about things that might happen or theoretical stuff, I've basically lost interest, essentially.
Yeah, well, to be fair, I mean, even bigger projects like Ethereum have had serious delays. But yeah, I think a 6-month delay is understandable, maybe 9 months, maybe even a year. But a lot of these projects are mature now. They've had 3 to 5 years to do the roadmap. So there can be delays. That's understandable. But at some point, I think you're absolutely right. You can't keep kicking the can down the road. And if you do, the project's going to collapse. People are going to sell it. They're going to become skeptical. And yeah, it can't all be vaporware, right? There's got to be something there. It's got to have a use case. And if you have a roadmap and you're not following it, things happen in business and development, but you can't have a 36-month delay or a 48-month delay or whatever these delays are. Yeah. You've got to have a roadmap and you've got to have tech. You can't just have a white paper with no tech behind it.
Yeah, I mean, you can write a white paper and then you've got to actually go and deliver. You know, one of the things that we've all had an issue with in the crypto space is basically great white paper, lovely website, slick marketing. Where's the product? So I think that is really going to have to be the way that 2020 and beyond changes. This is the pivotal moment, really. Like, it's been, we're over a decade in, we're into the next decade. So let's be honest, I think that in the next 3 to 4 years, we're going to see a lot of deaths of coins, teams, tokens, and we're going to see some emergent winners.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, the big players are going to be the first page on CoinGecko or CoinMarketCap's first 100 projects. But it also makes me want to ask the question, what comes first, the funding or the project? You know, you need some funding to have a project, but yeah, when you raise millions and millions of dollars and have nothing, it's kind of telling.
Yeah, it's really shocking, to be honest. When you've, and you know, people can read between the lines on this one if they want, but when you raise a lot of money and then the team basically disbands after a year, then there's obviously a problem there. You know, there's a problem with the management, there's a problem with the direction that a company has decided to go. So raising a lot of money is one thing, but if there's no product, there's no innovation, if there's a sudden change, if the social media starts getting funky and none of it makes sense, if you regress from a mainnet to an ERC20 token, for example, which is pretty ridiculous, then you know you've got to really start asking questions about that project and what they're in cryptocurrency for. So I think we're going to see that more and more in the coming year, in 2020, 2021, 2022, where the average consumer, thanks to podcasts like this, are more aware of, you know, and thanks to CoinSpies and other independent journalists that are willing to say the truth about what's happening, people start to realize, oh, right, okay, there's one side of crypto that is like cyberpunk. They really wanted to become anarchists in the world. There's another side where there's an actual real use case for blockchain technology in enterprise and in business. And then there's another side where, you know, 80% of projects are just scams that don't deliver anything. So all of those scams are going to die in this decade, which is a great thing. And we're going to see lots of products that are actually really useful in the next 5-10 years.
Definitely. And if you like our product, The Dark Side of the HODL Moon, be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe. All right. Awesome. Let's go to the next topic. I think I wouldn't say it's the breakout year, but I would say another big trend of 2019, kind of a winner, is maybe the emergence of decentralized finance with Ethereum's DAI token and some other projects that are kind of taking off. I think they're going to start cutting into some of the profits from the bigger exchanges. And also it's a way that you're going to be more secure when you put it into these decentralized exchanges and these decentralized projects. So for example, you can put it in and you can gain interest. There's other good projects that are centralized, like Celsius and a bunch of others, where you can put them in and they'll give you, 5, 6, 7, maybe up to even 8 or 9% return, but you're trusting that company. Sure, it's vetted, it's legit, but with decentralized finance, you kind of are control, like that old saying, you know, not your keys, not your coins. If you're putting it in Celsius, some other company, you're trusting it. With decentralized finance, you don't have to do that. So I wouldn't say it was a breakout year. Maybe we'll say that next year. But in 2019, I kind of feel like it was the real emergence of decentralized finance, which they've been talking about for years. And it kind of seems like it's finally coming.
I think that you're right there. I don't think it will be this year when it actually hits the mass market, but I think that the groundwork has been laid. What I really think is going to happen is it's going to be the young people in these emerging economies. It's going to be the young people in Latin America, the young people in Africa, and the young people in Southeast Asia, the unbanked people with mobile phones that don't have access to the existing financial services industry. They don't have the right paper, documentation. They don't meet certain criteria. They can't open an account because they don't have enough assets on them. Well, they can just create an address and they can just start interacting in the economy. And I can see like small pockets of, you know, enlightened communities that are basically willing to try this technology because they've got nothing to lose, really. I mean, there's no downside. if it actually if it works, the upside is huge. So I think you're going to see some really innovative entrepreneurial behavior in these markets, where they're going to take these, you know, decentralized finance tools built on top of things like DAI, and as they become more mature and more user friendly, these could really spread quickly. So you can imagine an economy running on basically a DAI, which is pegged to the US dollar anyway. That's the whole point of it. It's pegged via market forces, though. It's not pegged via trust us because we are Tether. It's very different from something like a Tether. So I think that we could see this, and I think it would be really interesting to have like a small use case or a case study in Africa or in a small village in Indonesia or somewhere like a place in Venezuela. If a little commune in Venezuela was willing to try it or something like that. Well, not a commune. Let's not say the dirty word, the C word. But a small place that's small enough but enlightened enough to try it. I think it would be successful. And then if it is successful, it'll catch on like wildfire, because the people in these places, they really need this this solution. The whole point of cryptocurrency was to bring financial freedom to the world, and many people have used the phrase "bank the unbanked." Well, I think that the roaring 20s is going to be that time.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe I'm optimistic in saying that 2020 is going to be the year of DeFi. Maybe it'll be 2021 or 2022 or a little bit ways off. But yeah, I think you've got some good insights there. I'm actually working on a little DeFi project on the dark side of the Hodl Moon. I can't really talk about it much right now, but you might hear about it in a few years. All right. Well, let's talk about something that maybe I don't want to talk about, but maybe I do, and I know you want to talk about, which is, Fake Toshi or Satoshi, Craig Wright, and the Tulip Trust. As we record this, it's actually January 1st where I am. I think it's early January 2nd where Josh is, and we're waiting for the Tulip Trust. So, Josh, where is it?
Yeah, it looks like the courier is caught in some type of a delay. It's over 1 million Bitcoin, which is, I think, worth over $8 billion, was supposed to be handed over to Craig Wright today for you. Well, yesterday for me. And time's running out, Craig, really. So a lot of people on... in the cryptosphere have long doubted this date. I personally think it was a good opportunity to take a speculative investment. So the upside was huge, the downside was low. So I did actually take a position on BSV in the hopes that there was some truth to this. It looks like that hope is now turning into kind of very unlikely to ever come through. So it looks like Craig Wright is not Satoshi after all. Who'd have thought?
Yeah, that's another thing with timelines or roadmaps, whether it's a project or a person. If you promise something that doesn't come to fruition, people are gonna finally start to doubt you and doubt the project. And I think even the huge BSV fans, the Craig Wright super fans, even they're going to have to look themselves in the mirror in a few months and realize that maybe it wasn't a great idea.
Well, if you put a date so specifically like they have, which is January the 1st, and that an event will happen and the event doesn't happen, then you only have yourself to blame, really. Like, I don't know why you would make a promise like that, knowing that you couldn't fulfill it. Like, knowing that you couldn't fulfill it, then you just going to lose face, as they say in Asia. You don't want to lose face. That looks a bit daft. So I don't personally understand why anyone would do that, because ostensibly Craig Wright is an intelligent person. He might be an angry person. He might be deluded. He might be, the scorn of some people, whatever. But he's definitely not an idiot. But I just frankly don't understand why you would make these claims knowing that you couldn't deliver on it. So I've definitely lost that bet in terms of the position that I held. I wanted to have a nice little payoff at the start of the year in a BSV pump and then get out of it. But that didn't happen. It looks like it's unlikely to happen at this point. And I was reading Calvin Air, and Calvin Air spinned it and saying, oh, it's going to be like February 4th now. So I think they're just going to come up with a new date every month. It's going to be like Brexit. It's just going to be delayed every now and again for BSV. They'll find a new date. They'll find a new reason to extend and dither and delay. So let's see what happens there. But honestly, my position is over in that one.
Yeah. All right. Well, 2019, let's talk about something that's really important. And 2019, it wasn't really the year of the scams, but there were definitely a few scams. I think the OneCoin was the biggest one, but I want to talk to one that's more recent to my memory, which is actually happened right at the end of December, and that is the Panda crowd sale wallet getting looted, and it was exit scammed by the 800 Crypto Club admin. And I know Rhett Crichton, I don't know much about him. I think he's forked some other projects. I think this one maybe is a fork of Hex. Maybe I think it's an ERC-20 token. And basically what happened, it was a multi-sig wallet, and one of the I guess signees in the multi-sig wallet convinced the other people in the wallet to sign it, saying he needed to move all the funds to a wallet to consolidate it, and they foolishly signed it. And it wasn't a big scam. I guess it was 27-28 Bitcoin Cash, which at this time is about $6,000 or so. It's not a huge scam, but I think it shows that scams happen all the time, and that maybe having a multi-sig wallet with anonymous people you don't know isn't the best idea.
Yeah, a multi-sig wallet with anonymous people you don't know is a terrible idea. I mean, it doesn't even make sense. It's just like saying to four or five, I don't know, it could be as little as three, but saying to random people that you've never met, it'd be like going on chat roulette and then saying, hey, do you fancy joining my multi-sig wallet thing? Yeah, sure. Sounds good.
Yeah. So, I'm not 100% sure they're anonymous, but it sounds like it because they just had like crypto. They just had like Telegram handles, so it doesn't really seem like they're connected to real people.
Yeah, if you're just a Telegram handle, you could. That's the problem with Telegram. It's too easy to change it. It's quite. I think they're changing Telegram a little bit. They're making it a little bit more secure than it has been in the past. I mean, Telegram was the absolute, you know, place to go for scammers because you could just imitate anybody. So, it wasn't really a large amount of money, which is good. Obviously, if any individual person lost that amount of money, they're going to be pissed. It doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it less of a problem that this happened. But at the end of the day, it just highlights the fact that there's still quite a long way to go in financial education. I know that financial education is getting better overall. Like, you could talk to most people now and they would understand that, oh, you know, money's backed by our faith in it. That's it. But when it comes to cryptocurrency, we've still got a long way to go. I mean, even people who are in the space, they don't fully see some of the blatant pitfalls of, you know, having a multi-sig wallet with strangers, things of that nature.
On the bright side, it did seem like moving forward, they're going to give everyone their money back. And actually, they're thinking about using the SLP dividends payments in the future if they actually get this project started again, which is an interesting solution to making sure the payments are fair and distributed fairly based on the amount of tokens you have. I think it's a pretty cool use of the SLB dividends tool. But like they say, not your keys, not your coins. But overall, I think 2019 was a really good year. I think most people thought the market would go higher than it did. I did as well. We've kind of been seeing a lot of like sideways action. It's kind of gone down a little bit, gone up a little bit, and it's really been just mostly sideways. I just expected to see a lot more movement, usually up, but maybe with more swings, and it seems like it's a little more stable, which is maybe a good thing, but I kind of thought the market would go up higher than it did. I think if we did our crypto prediction show, I definitely didn't predict it would be Bitcoin would be, you know, sub 10K at this point.
Well, we did our prediction show in August, to be fair. I think it was July or August. And we said in a year from now or by the end of next year, by the end of 2020. So we still have some, a lot of time, at least until August, to see where that goes. My prediction of a low of 6K in 2020 and a high of 86K can still come true. So we're at 7K. We're basically, we don't have to go down too much to hit the bottom, and then fill your bags because we're going to the moon.
Dark side of the HODL moon. You can see me and Josh there on our moon base working on things. Josh, I don't really have much else to say about 2019. Is there anything else you want to talk about that happened in 2019?
Well, I don't know really about the cryptocurrency space that we haven't talked about that we should talk about, but let's think about that for other episodes. I think 2019 was a successful year for all of the people that I know and my friends and family, and it was a great year overall. I had a really good year, did a lot of traveling, went to a lot of conferences, met a lot of nice people. We started this podcast, so that's a new beginning. So in 2020, this is where we basically firm it up, make it a more interesting show. Listen to our feedback from our, you know, growing community, and then we build this show into the best crypto show in the world in 2020.
Yeah, I think our prediction shows, we're going to do that a different time. There's a lot of things in the crypto space I'm excited about for 2020, but Dark Side of the HODL Moon, going to the HODL Moon, that's pretty much a no-brainer for me. I'm putting all my money on it. But I'm super excited. But yeah, let's wrap it up here. We're doing a little bit of a shorter episode, and maybe next time we can talk about we can do a new prediction show for 2020. And we've got a lot of big, exciting guests and big names in the space coming up. So until next time, we'll see you guys on the dark side
of the HODL Moon.
Thank you for joining us on Dark Side of the HODL Moon. If you haven't already subscribed, please do so. Also, be sure to join our Telegram group, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and follow us on BitChute and YouTube, where you can find all the episodes as well as highlights from previous episodes. You can also visit us at darksideofthehodlmoon.com.
HODL Moon!